Welcome to CPAC Today in Politics. Coming up, the Prime Minister links flooding to climate change.
With climate change, we're going to see more and more of these extreme weather events more regularly. It means we have to think about adaptation and mitigation and how we're going to move forward together.
The Premier designate in Prince Edward Island says he won't join the legal fight against the carbon tax.
Which is a little bit surprising. It's a Conservative government, but I think they describe themselves as being slightly right of center.
The president of the Philippines threatens to go to war with Canada over garbage.
I will advise Canada that your garbage is on the way. Prepare a grand reception. Eat it if you want to.
It's Thursday, April 25th. I'm Mark Sutcliffe. Let's get right to the top political stories this morning. I'm joined by National Post columnist John Iveson. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mark.
Let's start by talking about the Prime Minister's comments as he toured a flood-affected area in Gatineau, Quebec, just on the other side of the river from Ottawa. And he linked the flooding that's happening in a number of different places in Canada to climate change. And we know that climate change is going to be a big theme in Canadian politics this year. And this is, frankly, the second time in 3 years that there has been serious flooding in some of these areas. So obviously it's timely and it's topical.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he described the extreme weather as the new reality of climate change. You know, I think even the most ardent climate change denier would have a hard time saying these events are not happening more frequently and that they're not the result of the climate warming, whether there's a universal agreement on human activity being the cause of that. So this is something that Justin Trudeau has obviously made a theme of his whole prime ministership. It's something that I think that they see as a winner for the Liberal Party in the forthcoming election. At the same time, the opposition wants to talk about a carbon tax, which is Trudeau's preferred solution to climate change. It's going to be a battle between the two. The subject matter is going to be more or less the same, but the emphasis is going to be different from the different parties. Clearly, if the debate is about carbon, the debate is about the climate, then that is to Trudeau's benefit. If it turns to being about taxes and affordability, that's to the Conservatives' benefit. So I think that is really the, if not the ballot question, it's one of the big ballot questions. It's going to be a thing that determines where people put their votes.
Yeah, and as you describe it, it is a wedge issue, and I think the Liberals are gambling that there are more people on their side of the wedge than on the other side, and presumably the Conservatives are making a similar gamble.
Yeah, it's not entirely clear to me how, perhaps other than in Alberta, that the Conservative Party can make their case without doing anything. I mean, I think that they do have to put something in the shop window which says we are making efforts on climate change too. Right now they have nothing. They've promised something by the end of May, I think. So we will see a plan heavy on regulation. It's not as if regulation is without cost, because if you regulate companies and industries, their costs go up and they pass those costs on to consumers. But it is a less of a visible cost than a carbon tax that people actually see in their tax returns. Even though the Liberals are saying, well, we're going to rebate you the amount of money you spend on a carbon tax if you live in the provinces where the federal backstop kicks in. I think there's a lack of trust in the federal government that will actually be the case. And even if it's the case now, will it be the case in 5-10 years when the carbon tax increases quite dramatically? We don't know what it's going to increase after 2022, but you've got to assume it's going to go up and up and up. That seems to be the way the trajectory goes, certainly in the first 5 years. So it is an interesting case, and it's reflecting all across the country in every provincial race. We saw it in Alberta. We saw it even to some extent in Prince Edward Island. It is a big deal, and it's not clear yet where the public is sitting on the subject.
Meanwhile, the premier of the premier designate of Prince Edward Island, the new progressive conservative premier, is saying that his government won't join the legal fight against the carbon tax. I know that as provincial governments have changed across the country, we've seen more and more opposition to carbon pricing, but it doesn't look like that's going to come from Prince Edward Island.
Right, which is a little bit surprising. It's a conservative government, but I think they describe themselves as being slightly right of centre and describe their, Dennis King said, his reasons for not joining that alliance of provincial leaders against the carbon tax in court is because as an island jurisdiction, they're very conscious of the effects of climate, that rising sea levels would have an impact and so on. So, you know, it's obviously just a small jurisdiction, so it's not a major blow to the five provinces that are already opposing this, the federal carbon tax. But somewhat of a surprise, I think.
Meanwhile, you wrote about Alberta and just how aggressive Albertans want Jason Kenney to get in the early days of his premiership in taking on the federal government. They want to see a government that challenges Justin Trudeau and the federal Liberals.
Yeah, no, I think even speaking to you last week, I was suggesting that Jason Kenney's history as a federal politician was an arbiter of competing interests. He managed to get competing interests almost on side when it came to immigration, for example. And I think many of us thought, well, a lot of what he was saying in the election was grandstanding. He knew that much of this probably couldn't happen, some of the stuff on equalization, some of the stuff on carbon tax, that the court case probably was not going to be successful, and therefore he wouldn't push it too hard. I think the focus groups that were the basis of this study, which came out, post-election focus groups, suggest that the anger and hurt is such that they want Kenney to get very aggressive very quickly when it comes to taking on the federal government. I mean, his idea that there will be a referendum on equalization in 2021, if there was no progress on the pipeline and if the federal government rammed through Bill C-69, the person holding these focus groups was saying, well, nobody's talking about 2021. They want them to take on the federal equalization program now. It does seem that just as protesting pipelines has become a proxy for climate action in the environmental side, so building them is viewed as an antidote to this economic anxiety that's felt in Alberta. And so they want to see action now. As soon as he comes into office, there is an expectation that there will be action taken on repealing the Notley carbon tax, on perhaps even turning off the taps to BC if they don't get satisfaction there. It is a greater sense of anger than I think those of us who are outside of Alberta appreciate. It's not just a feeling that the oil price is down, there's a cyclical bust, which will again be followed by a cyclical boom. There's a feeling this is a structural problem that will not be solved unless something drastic is done.
All right, let's turn to the situation with the Philippines, where some garbage that has been sitting in container ships in the port of Manila has turned into quite an international issue. And the president of the Philippines is threatening to declare war on Canada if our government doesn't do something about it within the next week. What's going on here?
Yeah, well, I think that hopefully that is inflamed rhetoric and is not actually to be taken literally. I think it would be in keeping for the Philippines president that he would, Rodrigo Duterte, I think I'm pronouncing that right.
Yep.
He is a bit of a combustible character and is hopefully playing domestic politics here. But it was in it was discussed when he was elected. I mean, this is a big issue in the Philippines. The idea that a country as rich as Canada is sending its garbage to the Philippines is viewed as a bit of a national disgrace. So I think it is incumbent at this stage on the Canadian government, if it wants to get rid of this diplomatic black eye, particularly a government as eco-friendly as the Trudeau government, to do something about it. And by all accounts, it looks like the federal government has accepted that the private company that shipped these 100 containers is no more and can do nothing about it. So it's up to the government to do something. And apparently, you know, in typical bureaucratic language, they formed a committee to discuss the issue, which a joint technical working group, which suggests that nothing will be done for many moons. But I think it's sooner or later, probably later, the federal government has accepted its liability and will somehow remove these containers. It does not reflect well on Canada to see, you know, the waste of such a rich country being exported to a much poorer country.
No question. All right, John, thanks for your thoughts on all these topics. Have a great day.
And to you, Mark. Thanks.
That's John Iveson of the National Post.
It shows that Prince Edward Island wants the parties of Prince Edward Island to put partisan nature behind them, to work together, to do what's best for Prince Edward Island.
Now, let's take a look at what political columnists and commentators are writing about today. At globalnews.ca, Tasha Carradine makes the case that the progressive conservative win in PEI is just the latest challenge for Justin Trudeau. Carradine writes, "The PC victory marks the fifth time that voters have tossed a provincial Liberal government since Trudeau took office. All the goodwill he sought to create with the provinces has come completely undone through a combination of missteps by the Prime Minister and the competing agendas of conservative provincial parties. As the federal election looms, this fraying of national unity may be Trudeau's greatest failure." In Maclean's, Paul Wells argues Jason Kenney's election was not unprecedented. Wells writes, "A lot of the coverage about Jason Kenney's election and the situation it puts Justin Trudeau in might suggest it's some kind of unprecedented thing, but it is amply precedented in many ways. At the most general level, prime ministers run into trouble. It's why we try to make the job hard to get. The current state of affairs is well within the range of what Canadian prime ministers have had to face, and it's something Trudeau must surely have seen coming." In the Globe and Mail, Andrew Steele argues, "Any party using immigration as a political cudgel threatens the Canadian exceptionalism that allows us to enjoy peaceful diversity." Steele writes, "When Andrew Scheer inaccurately depicts a crisis of asylum seekers, he also potentially inflames that specific issue. Quebec's premier has argued for a religious symbol ban. More than one in four New Democrats and one in six Liberals raise concerns about visible minority immigration. They could be tempted to play to this sentiment. Instead, parties need to compete to address the anxieties and sense of powerlessness of all Canadians struggling in our globalized world." Now, here's what's coming up on Canada's political agenda. The Prime Minister will take part in an armchair discussion at the Nature Champions Summit in Montreal. He will also meet with the Chief Executive Officer of Intact Financial Corporation, the Director General of the World Wildlife Fund International, and the President and Chief Executive Officer of World Wildlife Fund Canada. Conservative leader Andrew Scheer will speak to volunteers and supporters ahead of a door-knocking blitz in Ottawa. Finance Minister Bill Morneau will take part in a town hall in Toronto with members of the Canadian Association for Retired Persons. Minister of Seniors Philomena Tassi will visit seniors organizations in the Toronto area. Agriculture Minister Marie-Claude Bibeau will be in Cambridge, Ontario, to speak at the official opening of CSHFB's Seed Share program. She will also make a funding announcement in Breslau, Ontario, and a funding announcement along with Democratic Institutions Minister Karina Gould in Burlington. Minister for Women Mariam Monsef will make an announcement in support of women's organizations in Halifax. Minister of Families Jean-Yves Duclos will visit Quebec City to talk about government support for low-income workers. Canadian Heritage Minister Pablo Rodriguez will announce financial support for the cultural sector in Saint-Hyacinthe and Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, Quebec. Indigenous Services Minister Seamus O'Regan will make an announcement and speak with the media in Winnipeg and will also speak at the Chief Assembly hosted by the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs. Public Services Minister Carla Qualtro and Public Safety Minister Ralph Goodale will make an announcement in Regina. Natural Resources Minister Amarjeet Sohi will announce funding for a clean technology project in Calgary. Infrastructure Minister François-Philippe Champagne will attend an infrastructure event in Langley, British Columbia. Treasury Board President Joyce Murray will mark the completion of an infrastructure project in Surrey, BC. She will also join members of the Surrey Board of Trade and local business leaders for a discussion on regulatory reform. And Governor General Julie Payette will present honors to 39 recipients during a ceremony at Rideau Hall in Ottawa. And that's CPAC Today in Politics for Thursday, April the 25th. Tune into Primetime Politics tonight on Seatback for coverage of all the day's events. Our podcast returns tomorrow morning. Have a great day.